this morning with the sundown shining in. Oh.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Now, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Well, on our face, Dr. Jack. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 15. NASDAQ Futures up 102. And a hot day in Chicago. Huge run-up yesterday is we're going to try and talk to Professor Carl here and others and Professor Hal regarding what the hell is going on and how do you play this game, because it's becoming difficult, but it's doable. It's actually it is, if you're not in the you know, in the mix, in the game as we are, as I am, as PTI is, because we're managing money for people, it's really hard to, all you do is see the headlines, market way up, this way up there, and yet there's such a major bifurcation in individual stocks. You can have stocks that are going down, you have stocks that go up, if you're not in the right ones. Matter of fact, NVIDIA, which is the, you know, the poster child of everything, was trading, you know, this is probably the most valuable stock in the world. It hit, let's see, where were we? We topped out at 229.85 2 weeks ago. No, in the middle of May.
No,
and first. Now we're at 196, so still, yep, higher than it was, but it's a number. Carl, you're always leading the charge on people who break the law should, like, go to jail or worse, and even though I...
Or worse, by the way.
Yeah, so I thought I said that. Or worse.
you did, and yeah. I am now... Because, by the way, the or worse part is because nobody does go to jail.
Right.
I would vastly prefer that we do due process of law and civilized society type things, which, you know, requires that when you break the law, you go to jail. But when you are able to break the law 50 times and not go to jail, or 100 times, or, for example... when you claim exemptions to laws that everybody else has to follow, for example, the President of the United States buying several million dollars worth of Exxon.
I'm staring right at that article. You know, you're getting pretty clairvoyant.
You know, I knew you were going to bring that one up because I saw it yesterday and you know, yeah. By the way, as you're probably aware, the President of the United States is the only person who is exempted by name for the federal statutes that otherwise make that illegal. Not name Trump, but name position. Okay.
Where does it say that exactly?
There's a federal statute on insider trading by federal officials who, you know, presumptively and obviously have inside information on what, you know, what departments are going to do and things. Okay. It is illegal for them to trade. The president is not covered by that statute.
I can't believe the line says all federal officials except the president.
Well, it doesn't say it that way. It says all federal officials, and then it delineates the qualifications.
You know, he's an elected official, so it probably says federal employees.
Well, it does include, remember, post the Stocks Act, it supposedly applies to our elected officials.
I
except
I,
him.
I, I f- We got to do a little research. I think not. I think that the Congress went back and exempted themselves.
Well, okay. What it says and what they enforce are two different things, in that the Stocks Act allegedly prohibits this. However, the Stocks Act does not provide for criminal penalties.
None of this stuff does in Washington. But this is leading me to bring everybody up to speed on this. President Donald Trump disclosed buying between $1 million and $5 million. First of all, that's a big spread. Yeah. An Exxon Enterprise stock on February 10th. 2 weeks later, ICE posted a notice seeking a five-year... Do we think ICE can be around that long? I sure as hell hope not. I posted a notice seeking a five-year, $220 million taser contract for about 17,800 devices. Did the Gestapo have 17,000 people in it? Along with unlimited cartridges and training, enough to more than quadruple its current inventory. Quadruple. The ICE notice does not name Axon, but procurement reviewers and policing experts told CNBC the specifications appear to match only Axon products. The contract so far has not been a... Okay, look, there's no evidence Trump was involved in or had knowledge of the procurement process or that Axon knew about his stock purchase. But ethics experts said the timing alone raises red flags. You know, the White House said Trump's assets are in a trust managed by his children. What a third party makes the trades and what there are no conflicts of interest. Did you hear what... You know, out of all the people that really need to go back over what they say in a mirror and watch themselves, the Speaker of the House could be the worst. Where did we get this guy? I mean, what is wrong with him?
Well, I'll tell you where we got it. We got him from the same place that we got what's about to happen with regards to our country no longer having the right to control.
By the way, you're backing up on the mic a little bit. We barely hear you.
Oh, okay. So,
there you go.
We got this from the exact same place that we're about to get a decision today that I'm 90% sure is going to say that it is a perfectly legitimate exercise for a Chinese woman who happens to be part of the PLA to come into the United States at 8.999% months pregnant for the specific purpose of dropping a child here who is a U.S. citizen and undermining, and who, by the way, by being a natural born citizen can become president of the United States, and that person is in fact an agent of the Chinese Communist Party.
Let's not go into who might be an agent, but did you hear what
Chief? If you do not have the ability to stop that,
I don't know who's going to vote for him. But anyway, did you hear what Johnson said yesterday?
Which piece of outrageous crap? Because there have been so many.
This is America, right? I mean, I know, believe me, I've been around long enough to know that there have been privileges, there have been unequal enforcement of the law, and those kinds of things through of varying degrees. It's reaching epic proportions here. But he said he's not worried about impeachment. He was warning the Republican Party about what would happen if they lost the House and the Senate. And he goes, I'm not so much worried about impeachment. I'm worried about the Congress now going after Trump's kids, cabinet officials, and other people for essentially what we're talking about.
Well, good. I hope they all go to prison.
By the way,
I'm going to vote in such a fashion that encourages that outcome.
Well,
from here forward, and the reason is this. Okay. Now, by the way, I will, to give some credit where credit is due. We had a plethora of Supreme Court decisions yesterday as well. All right, we've obviously got the big kahuna that's going to drop this morning because this is the last day of the term. And that's the way it normally goes, is the big decision comes, on the last day of the term, right? Notice there's no riot fencing up around the Supreme Court because only one side of the aisle ever riots historically. Of course, there's exceptions, but historically only one side riots. And therefore, we know which way it's going to go.
January 6th was a riot, but go ahead.
Well, I said historically. There's exceptions, okay? Not around the Supreme Court, okay? When the Dobbs decision was coming out, they put up the riot fence. So this one's coming out. That was a large decision. This one's coming out. They didn't bother putting up the riot fence. So we know which way it's going to go. But I will give them credit for one thing. Okay, there are plenty of people caterwauling over the Humphreys executor gutting that occurred yesterday. By the way, good cause, and it's about effing time. And here's why. Every 4 years, we elect a president. Every 4 years, the people get to choose who the person is that is to
be. No, they don't. They get to pick between two idiots.
Okay. Solve the other problem another day. All right, that's not the question before the court. The question before the court was whether or not a president who has been either term limited out and therefore isn't president anymore, or lost and therefore isn't president anymore, whether or not that person may reach back through executive agencies and maintain power in Washington, D.C. Not the ability to speak and you know, say whatever they want to say, but actual hard power. Because during Trump's first term and during his second, you had actual department heads, including Slaughter, who lost her job, and justly so, who openly said they were part of the resistance to the administration.
They did that with Obama, too. Mitch McConnell said,
look, it has nothing to do with whether or not it's only right when one guy does it. It has to do with the fact that the Constitution says that the executive is in charge of enforcing the laws. And that person, those departments, those agencies, under the executive.
All right, I'm not disputing.
Okay, well, now, what they also said. There's also people screaming about the Lisa Cook decision. Okay, on both sides of the aisle. Ha, 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 you lost. And then on the other side, no, you didn't. Well, the truth is, no, you didn't. However, the Federal Reserve, like it or not, is in fact a quasi-independent entity. It does not have the same standing.
You also have a president who is indicted for falsifying bank documents, firing somebody else.
Chief. All right, that 50 people rob banks doesn't mean
I understand that.
Guy gets
by the way, I'm absolutely on that. But the idea in this country that somebody would say if we have a change of political leadership, they're going to start going after lawbreakers where you're safe if the other guys win. I don't even though I think it's probably happened. I never thought
it's absolutely happened.
But for somebody to actually say it, is a new level. I think and I get feedback from everybody on the show. I think we've gone from immoral to amoral, which is a big step.
Chief, we've been there for quite a long time.
Not that long.
Excuse me. The Federal Reserve Act was instituted when?
1913. Yeah, it wasn't bad this hour of the morning, you know.
No, that's not so bad. You've obviously had your coffee.
Actually, I have not. Ricky did not run down the block. It's too hot.
Well, I've had my coffee.
By the way, how hot is it by you?
Well, we've got formal heat warnings up, and it's basically going to be swamp butt roasty for the next several days. That nice little mega block that's sitting over the top of the center part of the country is going to make life miserable.
Now, what is that all about? Is that El Nino, or is that just happens? Actually, you know what? I know we're going to get you back on Thursday because we're not on Friday, but I want to ask you a little bit about the weather because you're my expert, you know, type of thing.
Right.
I was listening about the time that these records now were chasing. Were right. 1953 and 1954.
Right.
And I could still drive by the house we lived in at the time. I was a very colicky baby. I can't imagine what it was like. I don't even know if they had a fan. And, you know, my father had to dress up in full regalia to go as a policeman. Right. People wore suits and ties to work every day, no matter what the weather. Yeah. I can't imagine. Was that true love or what?
Well, Chief, we had we lived in a world where a couple of things were true. I mean, you take a look at the construction of the time, and many homes had a full house attic fan. And the premise behind the and porches, by the way, and eaves that overhung.
You also had windows on both sides of the house, so.
Well, and, right, and porches and eaves that overhung the sides to prevent solar gain during the summertime, in during the day, okay, which today maybe you have eaves on two sides, but you have a hip roof and you have two exposed sides, and by the way, they pay no attention which way they face. So one of them...
Hey, speaking of which, one of these days, you're probably the only person who even knows what I'm talking about. Why is passive solar, any kind of passive solar stuff, which is sort of what you're talking about, why is that not even talked about today in this day of energy savings?
Because it's not about energy. It's not, okay? And then you have this insanity over in Europe, for example, in France, where they're all blaming us. You know, all those evil SOBs that won't turn their SUVs off. At the same time, they're refusing to put air conditioners in because, by God, that will make the planet hotter.
I was in Amsterdam. My hotel room didn't have an answer. It was a nice place.
Excuse me.
Let's get back to the... In 53 and 54, we had these heat waves. We obviously had the massive issue in the 30s. What were those, if I'm one of these crazy dudes today... What were those caused by? I mean, they weren't, or was it just, El Nino?
They obviously weren't caused by you driving an SUV.
Right.
So the El Nino that we now are apparently in, okay, and of course, exactly when it ends, we won't know until it does, because that's the way it works. It's extremely strong. Now, this was one of the possible outcomes. Remember, last year, the ENSO was neutral, okay? And I said this was going to cause two things. One, it was going to keep hurricanes away from the east and Gulf Coast of the United States, just because of the way it perturbs the steering currents with regards to the jet stream. That turned into a very strong El Nino. This is a cyclical thing. It happens. This one happens to be very strong. And
does it ever go back? Go to neutral and then go back into a La Nina.
That goes into La Nina. Yeah.
I mean, so in other words, we could come out of El Nino, go neutral, come back into another El Nino. It doesn't always have to be the full cycle.
That's right. Although it typically does, it doesn't have to. Okay. But the bottom line is that the last time that we had one of these at this strength, this is an unusually strong one. It has absolutely nothing to do with carbon dioxide emissions or anything like that. It's a natural cycle. However, it does a number of things. And one of the things it does is promote what are called omega blocks. And the reason they're called an omega block is because the jet stream kind of looks like the Greek letter.
Right, we're talking like 2 degrees of ocean temperature does all this.
Yeah. Well, the amount of heat in the ocean is unbelievable, okay? And, oh, by the way, a large part of this has to be coming from volcanism on the ocean floor, because there just simply isn't any way for insulation to cause this. Okay, it's just not possible, the amount of energy involved.
So when that area gets warmer, other areas are going to usually get colder. So it's not just a heat gain, right?
Well, Chief, what it does is it perturbs the jet stream.
Right. Okay. But it affects us. But I mean, the Southern Atlantic isn't necessarily warmer or anything like that.
Right, but the jet stream is to a large degree the barrier, if you will, kind of like you've gone into buildings where they have those air doors.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, well, it acts sort of like that, okay? So it essentially divides the Arctic air mass from the tropical air mass. That's an easy way to think about it. All right, so these omega blocks, which look like the Greek letter omega, tend to trap high pressure, and that causes these heat domes. All right, so you've got one that's sitting over France right now, and most of Europe, for that matter, and you have one that is sitting over the Midwest part of the United States, down into here.
But this happened in the 50s, obviously.
This happened in the 50s.
But nobody knows what the Dust Bowl thing was. That just... It happened so many years in a row that things got so dry they became dry?
Well, no. So like for example, in Kansas, where you had the actual Dust Bowl conditions, most of that particular cause was due to very poor farming practices. Okay,
but the heat didn't. It was the fact that the dust all blew.
Well, the heat was certainly a part of this. However, the heat part of it was also throughout the Rockies and on the slope, which, by the way, was not being farmed because it's not arable land, and therefore it and its upstream of Kansas. So that which is upstream cannot cause, you know, the other thing, yeah. Right? So Kansas did not cause the slope to become arid and extremely hot. It's the other way around. So it was a natural process. Of course, we made the outcome worse. But the screaming and caterwauling about, oh, you know, huge famines, da-da-da-da, that at that time, not here in the United States, but yes, across the rest of the world, it was a very serious agricultural event. It will be less of one this year, simply because we're better at agriculture now.
You know, even in an example, 70 years ago, what Carl's talking about out in Orland, you know, there's still farms out by where Audrey is. If you go 3 miles the other way, there's still farms, and some are being sold for whatever. But just in the last, you know, 15, 20 years that I've been going through that area, it used to be everybody plowed their fields over, even here in the fall. Now, right. Like, nobody does that. You leave it the way it is, and you just cut a new row in the spring, and you never really turn it over to where if you got some huge wind in December, the stuff's in the air.
Because you
can conserve stuff. And in Kansas, they just plowed everything, and it all just blew away.
Yeah, so I mean, there's all sorts of things that go on in this, you know, in this regard, right? And I mean, and we've gotten better at a number of this. We're not better in others, right? I mean, the crazy overuse of nitrogen-based fertilizers in the dead zone in the Gulf as a result, things like this. So I mean, there's good and there's bad, but the actual atmospheric phenomena is natural, and no, Americans and others are not. You know, we're not the evil blankety blanks, but even
the early 50s, though, was there some phenomenon there? Because it seems like a lot of these records all date back to 52, 53, 54.
Oh no, we just didn't. No, Chief, we just didn't keep look. It's very hard to record a record if there's nobody there to do it.
I'm talking about the heat records, like in Chicago.
I get that. Okay, but the point is, yes, there were plenty of people in Chicago. Okay, over periods of time, whatever. Blah 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 blah. Fine, true, all good, no problem. Okay, now what was the population density in the plains of Wyoming? And oh, by the way,
not much different than now.
Well, yeah. Actually quite a bit different than now.
Well, if you take the cities, yeah.
Well, no, but during the a couple of these previous cycles, that part of the American West, one of them in particular, during the Dust Bowl years and the 1950 years. In the early 1900s and in the 1800s, because there was another one of these cycles back in the 1800s, which incidentally was fairly coincident with the initiation of the Long Depression in 1873, which is kind of interesting. During one of those cycles, the American West, west of the Mississippi, was largely depopulated because it became impossible to grow enough crops and harvest enough to survive. And so settlements that were there, essentially, they were vacated essentially by force of the weather.
Well, before they found the Ogallala Aquifer, I don't know if you could farm out there.
Well, you could try, but if you had a drought for a couple of years, you were dead. Okay, so I mean, yeah, we had a lot to do with the condition of the land out there because. We thought one of the great ways to get rid of all the natives that were there was to kill all the buffalo, which incidentally, 1,000-pound animals stomping on the ground do a pretty good job.
Did you see? We have to go to Joel here pretty soon. You'll be back because when you come back, I want to talk about markets, money supply, and we got two different things going on here. One's pushing the market up, one's kind of pushing it down, but. Did you see that? Somebody sent me this. I went to YouTube, and somehow or another, there was this kind of almost semi-arid piece of land, and somebody decided to let like 10, 20 buffaloes out there, and within like 2 years, there was a big section there was green.
Yeah,
Was that because of the fertilizer?
Number one, they crap on the ground.
But they must be getting water from someplace.
No, but here's the other part of it, Chief. 1,000-pound animals stomping the dirt turns over the vegetation and the fertilizer. And
there still has to be water. They're dead.
Well, yes. However, you'd be surprised. I mean, look, there used to be far more buffalo out there than there were humans.
Oh, way more.
All right. Well, yeah, hello. I mean, I think the number was something like 60 million or something like this. I mean, it was an insane number.
By the way, we just had a bunch that were born out here at the Buffalo Preserve out west. And
By the way, they're pretty tasty, too. I've eaten it before. It's really a shame that, you know. I mean, now it's coming back. You can get bison now. But even so, we did that, and the ecological impact of killing them all off. You know, we actually have crazies out in Oregon now that have apparently, I don't know if they've actually passed it, but they're trying to pass it, a state law that essentially bans raising animals for the purpose of eating them.
Well, one thing about buffalo is you can't hurt them, so that's a problem.
Well, you can try.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to be on a horse that's trying, because they're faster and quicker than a horse.
I'm just saying, you can try. There's idiots that go out to Yellowstone and then try to take selfies with them. Okay, that has this habit.
I know a bunch of those idiots, because we were snowmobiling, and fortunately it was about 3 feet of snow on the ground, so it was kind of sluggish. But they were like standing right next to them, almost shaking horns.
I'll tell you what, you do. Oh boy,
in the wintertime they were pretty much just hanging, and they were just in, you know, big hunks of mud or snow, so they couldn't really go anywhere. But I mean, those boys are fast. I mean, and if they get angry with you, you're in bad shape.
Well, or if they get horny, that could be bad too.
Yeah. is Joel up?
No, he's not.
Well, then let's keep. I went through the other day. I don't think it was Friday.
Oh, wait, there he is.
All right. Well, then when we come back, and maybe we'll get Hal to opine in. We can hang a little bit longer. Somewhere along the line, I don't know if you can fade this market with what they're doing with the currency. And yet, at the same time, we know if they keep doing this to the currency, what's going to happen to other stuff. But you and I and Hal can't keep saying something's bad going to happen, because it hasn't happened in 20 years and nobody believes us. S&P futures up 11, S&P is up 80. Do we have Joel? How are you, buddy?
Hey, good morning, Chief.
What's the good word?
Facts and jocks.
Are you on a short list for the new basketball coach at Michigan?
No. I mean, everyone's criticizing Ward the skinny is that the contract was on the table for quite some time, and Dusty didn't sign it, and so the naysayers are like, well, you got to fire him, you can't stand for that. On the other hand, how do you fire a guy that just won you a national championship?
Well, there are some sort of principles in this world, and if you like a guy, if all of a sudden you're the money manager of the year and you're working for PTI or money management side Wall Street Advisors, and I give you what I think is a huge deal, if you tell me no, that's okay, I guess. I don't want to see you leave. If you tell me yes, that's great. You can't just say, let me look for 6 months and I'll get back to you. I mean, I don't know how do you deal with that?
No, I know. So, I mean, but, I think that, that's definitely valid. So some of the criticism there is valid. But I think he had a plan. Like, he doesn't have a plan. He doesn't have a plan, right? So what he did is his top assistant, Mike Boynton, has been with the first guy that he brought to Ann Arbor, former, head basketball coach at Oklahoma State, not only made the tournament once in 7 or 8 seasons, so not the most impressive pedigree. But he was, he did coach Kate Cunningham, and, you've seen it before where coaches, get a second chance and they get some more tutelage. So they brought him in as an interim, and now they're talking about putting him up a permanent tag on him. So a lot of criticism. I think it's easy to, criticize from the outside, but continuity, right? In this turbulent world of college basketball, what's wrong with a little continuity? And so far, the players, are backing him. There was so far the two stars of the team have decided to stay and haven't really found out about the transfers, because once you come in as a transfer and the coach leaves, and the portal reopens pretty quickly. So that will be a major thing, and see what the recruits that they brought in. But it's still a national championship program, still blue blood, still got the greatest alumni in the world, starting with me.
Well, absolutely.
It's a little disappointing because the Final Four is in the Motor City next year, so it would have been great to not have to travel and spend a ton of money to go to a Final Four. But let's say they make the Sweet 16 next year, or Elite Eight. Then it's a wash. But besides that, I really don't have too much information.
Well, I think what you see, and I just watch all the talking heads and all the alleged experts, right? And I don't consider myself to be one, other than the fact that, I coach the softball team and a little bit of football for a long time. And people lose track, I think, of what a coach actually can do and what they're supposed to do. And you can look at somebody and say, "Ah, man, this guy Joel, he never won a Super Bowl." Okay, but there's a lot of things go into that: luck, injuries, your backing, the players. But actually, a coach, you look at the cast of characters you have, and somebody's going to say, "Well, gee, that's." You're lucky to have a 500 cast of characters, and all of a sudden, instead of going, 8-8, you go 9-7 or 10-6. Well, you did a fantastic job. You didn't quote win, okay, but winning is you win three times a century if you're good, right? On average, it's there's way more to it than it's doing the best with what you have. So just because at Oklahoma State the guy didn't. Quote, he might not have had any money backing. He might not have, who knows what, I don't know any of his history. He might have gotten four more wins out of that team than Harry Houdini could have. But because they didn't win the national championship, everybody thinks they sucked. Well, that's not true. I mean, it just isn't. That's not the way sports work, right? And so you never really know. The whole idea, this quarterback, he didn't win any Super Bowls. Yeah, but he also never had a line, and he never had a halfback. Oh, yeah, well, so it doesn't matter. He didn't want to. I mean, that whole mentality is really crazy, isn't it?
I mean, you're speaking to a much broader thing here too, and I don't, in fear of sounding like an old fogey, I mean, the landscape of sports has just changed so much, and. You're coming, we were discussing with the wife, last night, season ticket holders for Michigan football since 1975. The same seats.
Yep.
They were my dad's seats. Only have been a basketball ticket holder, I don't know, for maybe 8, 10 years.
I have a quick, stupid question. Do you have the same name as your dad?
No. Well,
I asked that for a reason, because people had season tickets at Notre Dame. From back in the 50s, when actually they were happy when you bought a seat instead of you were doing them a favor instead of them doing you a favor. It's kind of a different world. Well, the George Went from Cheers, who just passed away, knew his family real well. I still know. I only met the dad a couple times. The dad's name was George Went. So George Sr. had season tickets in Notre Dame forever, right? So then, the old man dies and the thing goes to the house. George writes the check. This check still comes from George Went, right? Well, after a long period of time, even Notre Dame figured out that the old man must be dead. So then they come out and say, "Oh, no, you don't deserve these tickets." They never didn't buy them. They never were late with the check. You got to pay us like, 40 grand for the next 10 years. I mean, it's insane. All of a sudden, they're doing you a favor. But I mean, is that so? When I asked, when you said you were dad's tickets, they allowed you to transfer them to your name, where Notre Dame would
what
never
happened,
do that.
I could give you the quick skinny, and then I got a hot.
Right.
There was a period. This was a while ago, where I knew that if my dad passed on, that we wouldn't get the tickets. They wouldn't go to my mom. And there was at one point, I don't know how long ago, that you could transfer the tickets, $500 per ticket, into someone else's name.
Oh, so you had to pay him to do it.
And I think my girls were 10 and 13 at the time, and now they're 30. So it must have been, maybe been 20 years ago. So I transferred two to Dana and two to Emily. And now you could do it for free. Now, you know, so. But my dad passed away. I kept the tickets. But, I mean, Michigan has 8 home games this year. The first 4 in a row are home. There's a lot to do in the fall in Michigan, you know, the days and stuff. So, this Malik Beasley thing, I mean, I'm sure you saw that, indicted on gambling charges. Did you see about the cornerback from Detroit, Terrion Arnold? He officially has more interceptions or more felonies than interceptions, and he was a first-round draft choice. Or felony charges, let me say that. Innocent and proven guilty. So, you know, you turn on the radio or watch TV and you hear these kind of things and stuff. It's like, you know, these guys turning down Jalen Dern, turning down $40 million a year.
As my buddy Bill, my attorney friend, said, if you didn't have the NFL, you'd need another prison.
I mean, yeah. Well, hopefully they'll. Don't even get me started on politics.
Yeah, Steve, yeah.
Okay. It's too early in the morning.
All right, but when you invite me back on, I got my camera. I'm ready.
Okay. Okay, Chief.
All right.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Go Blue. Carl, we have. I can't believe what all the stuff that. You know, well, first of all, there's a huge. Despite what you want to say about the politics, anybody that doesn't. Think that there's a bifurcation in, I'm using that word twice today, in direction from Washington. The president wants inflation. It's good for him. It's good for his stocks. It's good for his family. It's good for the Durrell. He may say he doesn't, but he does. And or maybe he doesn't know why he does, but the fact is he does. Now, Powell pushed back a little on that, and all he did was bitch at the guy. Now, the new guy's in there, and all he's talking about is fighting inflation. But his first month he's in there, money supply is growing at a 13% annual rate. And, oh, by the way, the Fed balance sheet, which he's supposed to be bringing down, is going up rapidly now. So to think that you can believe any of these people. Now, I think we know that somewhere, even though the Fed is going to try and control the long-term rates as best they can through the balance sheet, I think we all know, and if Hal's listening, that if you start pushing money supply out that much, two things are going to happen. You really can't fight the market to the upside. I mean, I've finally learned that. You really can't fight the market to the upside. You have to maintain your, just in case if something bad happens for some clients, the ones that I have that maybe retired or whatever, I will always maintain my protection, but I'm very leery about cutting off the upside. Because these guys are pushing it. They absolutely are pushing it. That's their goal. They can say what they want, but I'm looking at the numbers, and that's exactly what they're doing. Yet you and I say, boy, you can't keep doing that forever, because one of these days, nobody's going to show up from overseas at 5% on these bonds, and they're going to be 10. And then all of a sudden, even Trump and his, you know, his
well, that's, well, that,
you know, but yeah. The fact is, it hasn't happened. You know, and
okay, but here's the problem. Yeah, I get where you're going with that. It the logic sound, you know, appears to be sound, right?
Well, thank you. I've only been looking at this for 50 years.
well, so am I, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like I said, the logic appears to be sound. The problem with it is, as I pointed out in the article that I posted, and I talked about it on, you know, when we were on the last time. The issue that arises is that when and it's shown up in the federal government first, but it's going to hit every corporation. The reason it showed up in the federal government first is because we had a series of Treasury secretaries that aggressively rolled down the rate curve during the very low period of time, okay, which was stupid. They should have gone the other direction. Hello? But that's not what they did. So if you look at Fred and you look at the interest expense, the coverage expense, it has literally gone vertical in the last few years. All right. That cannot be stopped except by killing the deficit spending, which is where the expansion of the money supply comes from. If that doesn't happen, the interest expense continues to go north. And, oh, by the way, corporations, their tenor tends to run about 10 years. So we're about five into the out-of-buffer aspect of this. And I've talked about the buffer. This is the thing that I missed coming out of 2008, all right? And that is the expansion in global trade. If you go from a trillion in trade to a trillion five, you can put up $500 billion worth of deficit spending without having an immediate inflationary impact in your economy. Why? Because the $500 billion is in transit between the countries, and therefore it is sequestered. But it is the delta. It is not the level that causes this. Well, so sorry, so sad. That can't go on forever, and hasn't. All right. And in addition to that, you've now run out of buffer, which is in full evidence from what's happened to federal interest expense. When that hits corporations, one of two things has to occur. Either the corporation can't pay it, or if they can pay it, it hits their operating income, which in turn means that either your PE is going to go up or the market's going to react badly to it. One of the two. All right. Now, so far, the answer has been PEs don't matter.
Well, I think
well, I mean, but okay. But now look at this thing that just occurred. You just had.
All right. Let me comment on what you just said, though. I think where you're, because I'm looking for why I've been wrong. Okay.
Yeah. Well.
Okay. Now, I think where you might be mistaken in that, and it, you're right in the sense that it's not a static thing; it's a flow thing. But because
it's
of
a delta, it's a delta inflow.
Well, okay.
Yeah.
But if you're, it's not a stock analysis. You would say that
no,
if,
it's a flow analysis, right?
Right. So you would say that a company who somehow went out 3 years ago and managed to get, and some people did, like 3% and 4% long term rates, say 20-year mm-hmm. rates. Well, now you know they're getting close to where. Especially around for 10, they're getting to the point where they have to start rolling them. And what you're saying is they're going to roll them for, pick a number, 2 to 4.5, or 3 to 5, or something, and it's a problem. Okay, but careful. I'm going to say careful with that. On the stock analysis, you're 100% correct. On the flow analysis, what I think is happening is when they borrowed at 2.5%, the inflation was really 4. So it was one frig of a deal for them and the government. It had been a real bad deal for the schmucks like us who lent them the money. I think now that they're now going to have to pay 5, I think you're going to have inflation of 8, which still still puts them under the inflation number. So the fact that
Chief,
okay, what I'm saying is if Pete, you know, first of all, a brokerage firm can't really have debt because it's not counted as good capital. But say we could. If PTI Securities went out and borrowed money at 4% and the next year raised our rates at 6%, we're fine. So now 2 years from now we have to you know re-up, and now we're going to pay 6 instead of 4, but now if we can raise our rates 8%, we're still fine. And I think that's what's happening. And why what you and I keep thinking, where is this all going to end? I think the fly in the ointment there is the incredible amount of money we borrow from overseas. I don't know if we can browbeat them the way we have the last 15-20 years.
Okay, understand something that is happening, and I can tell you this because I know people that live in these countries. Okay, this is not people who are tourists or business people who have a reason to lie. These are people who are living it. All right, as you're probably well aware. There is this whole thing going on with DRAM right now.
Yeah.
All right. And SK Hynix and Samsung are both primarily South Korean firms in terms of where this manufacturing actually takes place. All right. I don't care where someone's headquartered. I care where they're actually doing the thing. All right. And that's where they're doing the thing. Now, there's been a lot of political pressure coming from, I wonder what country.
Yeah.
For these firms to expand that, not just within South Korea and other places, but also in the United States. This has not gone well. All right? And part of the reason is that while there have been foundries put up, there's one that a large one that was put up over here by TSMC, Its yield has been horrible. They have brought in a whole bunch of foreigners to operate it instead of hiring Americans, which they said they were going to do, which, by the way, is where they got the chips.
Is this just the one? Just the one in Alabama? Or one in Phoenix?
Arizona, I think. Yeah. Right. They said they were going to hire Americans to run it. They didn't. They brought in H-1Bs and other contractors. They cheated. They broke the law that was the requirement for them to get the funding from the CHIPS Act. Okay, they haven't been nailed on this yet, but at some point the political backlash on this is going to get serious. And here is the punchline, though. Everyone is looking at Micron's stock price and is looking at SK Hynix talking about trying to list here in the United States, which, you know, supposedly there's an IPO coming over here. Okay, fine, except if you look at the monetary impact over in South Korea and what it's done to people who live there, it's hideous. And you are talking about a country that, besides these higher technology firms, I mean, that's basic. That's who they are. That's what they do.
Or they make clothes.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying that's what they do, right? I mean, making clothes is not a high margin business, right?
I understand.
Same thing in Vietnam, right? Yeah. All right. So the problem is this entire beggar thy neighbor crap with shoving stuff overseas and creating dislocations of other people's currencies, you screw those people out of the ability to survive because of the inflationary impact and the dilution of their currency. That ends up ultimately boomeranging here. You now have the government, the DOJ has said they're suing over supposed price fixing in the memory space. Notice that what they're not doing under 15 U.S.C. Chapter 1 is indicting, even though it's a felony, if in fact there is price fixing going on. Now, on the other side of the coin, every one of these firms has been around for several decades.
Yeah, oh yeah.
They're not new companies. They've seen this movie before.
Well, so is Commonwealth Edison, around for 120 years, so yeah.
Well, but they've seen this movie before. And every time they've seen this movie and they built capacity into this sort of a ramp in demand, it has collapsed out from under them, and they've been sitting on tens of billions of dollars worth of investment in a foundry that nobody wants to buy the products out of. A couple of them have come close to going bankrupt this way a couple of times.
Micron has gone from 95 to 12 like a couple times.
Okay, they've come close to blowing up as a result of this. All right, they're not stupid enough to do it again, and they're not going to. The second problem is that of the supposed demand that's driving this, and at the present time, it's been real. Okay, the AI chip guys. The problem with these guys is zero of them, literally zero, has a positive operating margin.
What's the number of NVIDIA has, if you take their top four customers away, isn't it like 80% of their business?
Yeah, well, and it's all circular
finance. Is it that high or is it 70? I mean, it's up there.
It's some stupid number, but yeah. it's all circular financing. And secondly, all these guys, because of the pricing, because of the operating margins that NVIDIA has on these chips, which, of course, is public because they're a public company. They have to publish it, okay? Every one of these customers is shooting at them. Google has their own chip line that they're working. AMD is coming
after them. Well, you also have a company, I don't know that business like you
do.
I'm just saying,
Arm Holdings is coming after them. All of these firms... And by the way, the patents on the CUDA language have expired. So
well,
now,
Carl,
you have,
when you answer me this, whatever you want, give yourself a few, but answer me that when you say innovation, if I or you come out and you build, you know, some sort of software, whatever it is, whether it's AI or whatever it is, and you need all this power and you got to go buy this monster chip. Well, part of it is on the supply side, the chip side, they get more efficient over time and so forth. But don't also you on the demand side saying, I'm going to redo my software where I don't need as much power. I mean, that happens too, right?
Yeah, there's multiple layers to this. But we went through this, you know, look, I dealt with this in a serious way in the 1990s, all right, because it was one of the major cash management problems. Because I did not believe in the idea of levering up, you know, another turn of the crank, please, sir. I didn't play that game. So the cash management problem was that every 18 months or so, your equipment still worked perfectly fine, but it was functionally obsolete. And the reason is it wasn't as fast and it consumed more electricity. So you were eventually going to get nailed by the competitor who had the newer stuff. He was able to be better, faster, cheaper. That's death if you're on the other side of the table, right? So you had to stay up with the other guy down the road that was doing the same sort of thing. Because if you didn't, you were going to get buried. And this is happening in this space right now. And these models are coming, they're coming into the enterprise, they're being limited, people are realizing that the prime directive of all of these so-called large language models is to force you to expend tokens, which of course you have to buy, and that is why they supposedly hallucinate. It's not that they hallucinate. If you go on my forum and you punch in a search term that doesn't exist, within a thousandth of a second, the system knows this because there is no node that matches that request. If you put in something into an AI and you ask for an analysis of 10 different things, and it has 9 of them in its corpus of knowledge, and one that's missing, it knows instantly, before it consumed any of your money, that it doesn't have the 10th. It doesn't tell you, because if it does that, it doesn't get paid. Now, that...
So what does it do? Try and find the answer?
It makes it up if it has to integrate into the mind that it's got. So it can charge you, right. And the thing is, what people don't understand about this, it's not hallucinating. It's following its programming. Its programming is to consume your money.
So what if the AI has never heard, say, about Hal, and we ask them for a complete biography, they just make it up?
Well, it will pull what it can find from public sources that it has in its corpus of training information, and then it invents the rest.
I think we should try that.
Well, you know what? This comes up all the time. You ask it about something, you ask it to synthesize something across 10 variables.
I'd like to try that with all my guests. Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah, well, there's a problem with this, Chief, which is that you now have to fact check every one of those 10 personally, because if you don't, you don't know which
one. I'd like to see what it makes up.
Well, yeah, that's great, except now you can't use that in a business process, because if the wrong one is made up, you're going to be wrong.
Well, believe me, I could use it. whatever.
Yeah, okay. Thanks. Here we go. You know,
Carl, you realize what this says about you?
it says you're a clown.
It says here you're 6'4", 225, and you're ripped. Is that really you?
Well, you know, we'll see what's going on here. I think this is one of the questions. The problem that we have here in the current day context is that all this CapEx and all this nonsense that's been going on here is that we are just going the wrong way, okay? In that these are all built, this is much like all the dark fiber that was put in the 1990s. They're going to need it tomorrow. They don't need it right now. They're going to pay tomorrow.
Well, Carl, it's kind of no difference in principle than steel companies and you name it. Everything, there's never going to be enough, and all of a sudden there's too much. I mean,
well, this is driven.
It's also it's called the business cycle, correct?
Well, it is, but it's also today it's all on steroids because of the hype machine and social media, and CNBC is screaming at the from the rafters every day. You've got the you've got places like NVIDIA that are actually financing their customers, which is insane.
That's not new, though.
No, it's not. But you know what? We do more and more and more of this, right? And
remember, you ever heard of the word Intel?
Well, how about Lucent? Hello?
Yeah.
By the way, Lucent blew up doing this. So, I mean, there's...
For those that don't remember, younger listeners, Lucent was at one time the most widely held stock in the New York Stock Exchange. It used to be Western Electric, right?
Yeah, well,
No, it wasn't Tel Labs. It was
Bell Labs. Yeah,
yeah, and they have Western Electric too.
They made essentially every telephone switch ever, originally.
You know, way back in the day, there was a place in, well, I would say in Chicago, but it was actually in Hawthorne, right next to Cicero. It was called the Hawthorne Plant. It was a 24-6 operation, and I'm going to say everything that was made, from telephones to big switching boards to... My uncle used to... the cable was no good. When it came back, his job was to resplit the cable, take the copper out so they could start over again. And how many... Was there 35,000 people worked? I think everything that you bought from Alexander Graham Bell was made in that plant, right?
Yeah. Well, here... The
and by the way, the telephones will last 400 years.
it was also better than, you know, yeah. They really did. Boy, they were good at what they did. All right. I mean, no kidding here.
Do we have a? I wanted to ask you again though, because we, and if Hal's in, please pipe up.
I'm in.
We've been, the three of us, a little bit of Russell, but mostly the three of us, have been zeroing in on the monetary part of what's going on in the world, and we have been, and you know, believe it or not, Hal, I remember what you say maybe more than you do.
I don't remember anything.
Well, there you go. You know, we've been talking about what if, you know, the money supply growth was really 3.5-4, which it has been over the last several years. We've all been talking, maybe a little more at times. Clearly, way more during COVID. We had that spike for 18-24 months of 40%, which is unheard of, that we're still dealing with. But by and large, it's been 4-4.5%, sometimes higher, sometimes lower. And we've all talked about the real inflation rate really was, and hell, you're all over this, real inflation rate really was 3.5-4, 4.5, not the 2 or less that these guys have been telling us.
Well, it's about double what the CPI says it is, I think.
Okay, but my point is, the last 3 months, you know, if we've been, you know, we've been barking this song now for several years. Well, now it appears that our new Fed guy, Mr. Anti-Inflation, the last 3 months, we're talking an average of 10% annual rate in the money supply, which is way different than the 4 we've essentially been bitching about. Now what? What kind of world are we entering? We're going to enter...
Well, I just looked at the weekly M2, and they have it updated through June 1st. And I just reapplied my quadratic growth trend to it. It looks like it's actually moderating. I have an expected increase by this time next year of just 2.2%.
When I look at the April to May, it's the biggest bulge we've ever had. How do you come up with something totally different?
Well, I'm using weekly numbers.
Yeah, but they got to add up. If you add four of them together, it's got to be the month.
Chief, remember April to May was before Warsh was in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
The month
before, if you take the 2 months, it's 9.7. You take the 3 months, it's 7.5. It's way away from 2 or 3.
Well, I'm looking at what I expect it to be in a year from now on a quadratic growth trend. So there's an assumption there that this quadratic growth trend is going to remain for the next year.
Right.
I have it being just 2.2% higher this time next year. That's what I have it at. And, you know, I've been applying the same tool for probably 3 years now. And honestly, it looks like, you know, whatever they're doing at the Fed, you know, it doesn't look like they're expanding recklessly like they were in the past.
I tell you what, I mean, you're Mr. Math, and I'll bow to you, but look at the one-year chart. It's accelerating all through.
Well, you want to look at more than just one chart. I looked at the Fed balance sheet. And the Fed balance sheet data is quarterly. And the latest release is quarter one, 2026. And it was up dramatically from the last quarter of 2025. In that quarter-to-quarter period, it was up 3.5%. But we only have through quarter one of 2026.
Okay, but from my standpoint... Don't necessarily look. There should be a huge correlation between the money supply and the Fed balance sheet, right?
Well, there is.
Okay,
but the latest data we have is quarter one of 2026.
But hear me out. When you have instances, and I think all three of us have gone through it ad nauseum of how in our system, individual people can increase the money supply. because of the supply of credit. When you see the market doing what it's doing, the amount of credit available to people to buy more stack, all you got to do is call us. And we're a small firm. So what I'm saying, in times like that, the Fed has to be actively fighting the increase in money supply just to keep it down to the rate. So in fact, they need the Fed balance sheet to be rolling off incredibly fast just to match up with the amount of money coming out of the brokerage industry.
Well, when the balance sheet is expanding, what's going on is not only are they taking the proceeds from the Treasury retiring bonds that they currently own, they're taking those funds, and they could just bury them in the backyard, but they're taking those funds, they're buying new Treasuries from banks with that money, plus they're printing money to buy even more Treasuries. That's how the balance sheet expands, and it looks like that happened pretty rapidly from Q4 of 2025 to Q1 of 2026, and that's the latest data that's available.
All right, my point is there.
I think Carl has a point. You know, the data that you're looking at is 2 or 3 months old.
Okay,
Warsh wasn't.
All right, let's not. Okay, I know Warsh is Trump's guy, so he's going to be spectacular. Okay, I'll concede that.
I'm just saying we haven't observed yet what he's done because the data.
He's been in charge for a month. There's been no announcement.
Yeah, but the data that you're looking at is at least 2 or 3 months old.
If he was going to change it at his first new conference, he would have said, the three of us would have gotten three bullet points. We'd have said, okay, I'm really going to fight this inflation.
We don't know what he's going to do yet because the Fed hasn't released that data.
Okay, let's get back to point number one. Between April and May.
You're expecting what's never going to happen. The Federal Reserve Chairman should have gone in front of Congress 15 years ago and said, if you continue to run 7% fiscal deficits, the short-term rates are going to be 8.5%.
Yeah,
he should have said, if you're going to do it, you better borrow. But here's my.
We're going to maintain a positive slope. We're going to maintain a positive rate of real return against your fiscal deficit.
Okay,
that's our job, and that's what we're going to do.
Okay,
but not one Fed chair has done that, nor will they ever.
Right, yeah. But here's my what I'm trying to joust with Hal here for a second. You're talking about balance sheet in a vacuum. It's not in a vacuum. Between April and May, the amount of margin borrowing for stocks is up 100.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I've been is up.
Okay, it's up $110 billion. So the Fed, which by the way, if the stocks are up another $100 billion, which they probably were, that's 200 more billion that somebody can borrow. The Fed has to actively fight that, so they can actually be dropping the balance sheet dramatically and still not doing their job because of the way this other thing is expanding. It's not a zero sum game. I mean, if the country is expanding, the credit is expanding way more than it maybe ought to. They have to actually pull back on it. It's not a question of whether they're expanding it; they're not contracting it enough. Am I losing everybody here?
We've pointed that out, but to lay it at Warsh's feet, we can't do that because the data is old. I mean, the latest I can find of the Fed's balance sheet is first quarter 2026.
Well, first of all,
so
Trump,
if that's increasing rapidly, that's under Powell.
It's under somebody's somebody's watch.
It was under Powell's watch.
And he has a boss that bitches the shit out of him for not making it worse.
I agree.
So I mean, what I'm saying, if Warsh was going
to
be a changer,
to me it looks like Powell was doing the president's bidding.
Okay, so I'm saying if Warsh, and Carl's right, it would
he
never.
He wasn't holding the line.
If he was going to, he's reeling off, he's diarrhea of the mouth, and how much he's going to fight inflation. If he's going to do it, the three of us would sit down and put three bullet points down. By the way, we're cutting money supply growth to 2% at max. We're going to put a 10%.
I would go further. I would say
1%. Okay. We're gonna put a 10% reserve requirement back in because we don't know why the hell it's gone. And oh, by the way, we're gonna make sure that you put up 60% for new stocks instead of 50. If he was serious, that's what he would say. That he didn't. So my feeling is he's not serious.
Well, we got to reverse these banking rule changes that encourage bank lending into financial assets. I mean, that's really where all the bank lending is happening.
What do you mean? They're, that's where they get paid. What do you think a brokerage firm makes money?
Yeah. I mean, basically, only people who lend money for the purchases of financial assets are really have access to credit. Everybody, the growth of credit in other sectors is below probably the rate of economic growth is probably about 1 or 2% in other sectors. Only in that sector is lending growing rapidly.
What do you think?
So that's a problem, and that's how we see the stock market going ever higher. You know,
well,
and MT doesn't have to expand. MT doesn't have to expand for that to happen, because if all the lending growth is in that one sector, that's going to fuel stock markets.
You are absolutely correct. By the way, Hal, By the way,
Chief, if you want to know one of the ways that this happens in the stock market, if you look at what T-Mobile, which is a public company, just did, okay, yesterday, by the way, I happen to be one of their customers, so they stuck it in my butt and broke it off, along with everybody else. Their promise, which they made, and has been
Earl,
the case.
Were you in the military, by the way? Just curious.
No, but I probably should
you
have
do,
been right
You do talk
that.
Like you were in the Navy.
Yeah, well, there you go. So for their entire corporate life, all the way back to before T-Mobile, before Deutsche Telekom bought them out, all right, when they used to be VoiceStream, their bottom line difference between them and the other carriers was that if you had a plan, as long as you made no changes to it of any kind, you could keep it. Okay? That was one of the things that they always did. So your price did not change. Now if you voluntarily did something, that was on
you.
Well,
they could whack you.
Well, you know, Carl, if you were a trader and you said, we'll never raise your rates, we would say never is a long time.
Okay, but here's the thing. Now, as it turns out, as time goes on, there are things that change that make it advantageous for you to want to make a change, okay? And that's fine. It's voluntary. All right. So they had this plan that was around before I moved up here to Tennessee that I dubbed the geezer plan. You had to be 55 or better to get it as a primary line holder.
Then
you
could have up to, being 55 is not meaning you're a geezer.
Well, I called it the geezer plan, okay?
I take offense to that.
Well, so there you go. So
does Hal understand that at every age you are 10 years older than he was old?
There you go. So anyway, I get on this thing and I put my daughter's line on there because you could have other people that were not 55, but the primary account holder had to be 55. All right, fine. So she pays me half the price, and it was a pretty good deal. Then they turn around and they say, okay, if you want, unless you want to pay an extra $10 a month, you can't use a credit card to pay. It has to be direct debit. All right, well, you know, I get that because their costs are higher to process credit, whatever. So I'm like, all right, whatever. So I have it go through a debit card that I have this link to.
Let's let everybody in the country know your bank account number.
Well, you know, this particular account never has any money in it except to pay this bill anyway, so I don't care. You know, go ahead and try it. It isn't going to work. It's going to bounce. So that's fine for a while. Then I get this thing. Oh, by the way, your plan is being retired. Now, they've never done, in the history of the company, they've never done this before.
I went through this with my office mate yesterday afternoon, by the way.
Well, and now they're...
They must have had a significant number of customers in that plan to want to retire it like that.
Well,
they didn't have any customers in it.
Well,
hell, if you'd have been here, all I hear is, hey, what's with these guys? They said they were never going to change us. Look what they just did.
It wasn't just one plan, Hal. Yeah. They did it to all...
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They did
okay.
it all.
So basically, everybody is getting whacked with roughly a $6 a line increase.
Yeah.
Okay. And you know, basically, you don't like a tough crap because we're killing all the previous plans.
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, we'll promise not to screw you again for another 5 years.
Hal, do you know if that's going to?
You mean like the last time, right?
Hal, do you know if that's going to filter through to the what do you call the people that are kind of the knockoff guys?
Well,
consumer cellular and those kinds of people.
Okay, except here's the thing. Now all of a sudden the NVMOs, because they're like US Cellular, for example, you can choose which of the carriers you ride on, and you can switch.
Okay.
Right? So you can change between T-Mobile, Verizon, AT&T as the underlying carrier. But all of a sudden, now this plan that I had, the geezer thing, was very cost competitive. It was a little bit more money than doing something like that. However, it did have some benefits. And, you know, over that, which I didn't need all that often. But
you might have to get a new phone if you switch to AT&T or something.
No, not at all. I run all on lock devices anyway. The gambit.
Nobody knows what the hell that is, but go ahead, keep going.
Well, you buy the device, it's not locked.
Okay, you're the only person in the world who does it. Everybody else, if you switch from Verizon to AT&T, you need a new phone.
By the way, the entire reason T-Mobile did this is because almost everybody does exactly that, and they pay for the device over 2 years, and they're stuck for the next year and a half or 2 years because they have a financed phone from the carrier.
Right.
All right. Now, I don't do that. I buy the device, and I can go wherever I want anytime I want. All right, but most people don't, and this is one of the reasons that they think they can get away with this game. Well, so now Sarah and I are going to have to sit down. We're going to have to talk about, I don't have the exact total on how badly I'm going to, get it in my butt and get it broken off. But the text I got yesterday specifically said your price is going up. So, and oh, by the way, then I go online on their portal, and my billing amount has not at this point changed. So how much is it going up? I don't know.
But for a regular schmuck who bought, say, two phones at T-Mobile, and he says, screw you guys, I'm going to Verizon, the phone doesn't work, does it?
Yeah.
It'll work.
Sometimes the phones don't work.
Well, these days, they are all cross-carrier compatible because the companies don't make ones that aren't. The problem is it's locked to that carrier, and until you pay it off, in order to get it unlocked so you can move it, you have to pay it off.
Oh, okay.
Well, I think what's going on with these phones, too, is that certain models don't work on certain networks.
Well, that's not so true anymore. Yeah.
I had a model that wouldn't work on AT&T.
No, I know, but the only place that's true anymore, and that used to be the case almost universally.
Yeah.
It is no longer true. The exception is that if you want to use Verizon, Verizon has a millimeter wave channel that is only in use in large cities, and it is a weird band that is far enough out of the normal range that is used for cellular frequencies both here and abroad that basically that's the differentiator, okay? Now, would that impact you if you don't have that band? Not terribly, except when you're in the city core of major. So, like, if you're sitting in downtown Chicago, it probably would impact your service. Other than that, no. And that's just the way it is now. So, like, if you go and you get a Google Pixel, which is Google's phone, you buy one of those, or you buy an iPhone, and you buy it from Apple. You don't get it from the carrier, but you actually buy it directly from Apple. It's going to work on any of the carriers. The problem is if you get it from the carrier, they lock it to prevent you from taking it without paying it off.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah. All right, so why don't we get back to despite Hal complaining about him using the wrong M2 numbers, let's say, for instance, we've all complained.
You're just using different M2 numbers.
Okay, we've all basically.
They're not wrong.
I think without even. I'll lob this one out there. All three of us are in agreement that for a long period of time, big companies and the government have been able to borrow money from the dopey people, meaning us, for less than the inflation rate.
Definitely.
Okay, so to me, it seems like that might actually be accelerating a little bit. And early on in the show, Carl and I were talking about where is the limit there? And in their mind, they've been doing it for 20 years, what's the problem? In our mind, we sit there and say, well, there's got to be some kind of a wall here where you get too far, and yet the wall never seems to happen. The market just keeps going up, and oh, by the way, they just keep doing it, and somehow or another, 90% of the population is lending people money at, well, I guess if you're in the treasuries, they're 4% or 3%. If you're in a bank, it might be up to, you're getting nothing on your checking account. But the same person is borrowing it from the bank at 20%. So the scalpage, the rape of the 85% of the Americans appears to be alive and well if you're one of the people in Washington or in a bank. When or if does that ever stop? I always thought the fly in the ointment might be that there's so much of the money is coming from overseas, they may decide, I'm not giving the money to those idiots anymore, or something, but that doesn't even seem to be. In our mind, we think it's going to, there's a limit to this. In their mind, there is none. So far, we've been wrong, and they've been right. When do we ever get to be right, or do we even want to be right, I guess is the question.
Well, I think what's going on is, for maybe 80, 90, 100 years, people have been figuring out a solution to when the Fed expands money supply too much, eventually there's a crash. And I think they think they've figured it out. And they pay interest on reserves.
Okay, before you
keep money trapped in the banking system.
Stop. That statement said a lot right there. In the 70s and 80s, the Fed, the government, was not able to borrow at 3% while the inflation rate was 6. They were borrowing at 12 when the inflation rate was 10. They were getting sucked up on inflation as bad as everybody else. Now they seem to have found a way where other people get it and they don't. And I'm curious, how are they doing that?
Well, I think they just figured out a way to keep excess money being trapped in the banking system.
And like only, chief, go ahead.
They trap it in there, right? They pay interest.
Well, that's what they try to do
to keep
now. But
banks from making loans.
Yeah, but look at how this stuff leaks out. Okay, just as an
example. It does leak out. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but look at what it does to Americans. Okay, generally, here's just one example of one of the things that it did. You had this illegal TPS nonsense with something like 300,000 Haitians, okay? Mm-hmm. You dumped 40% of the population of Springfield, Ohio, into there on government from day one, Medicaid, Section 8, food stamps. Dole turns around and fires all the Americans working there that were making $21 an hour and hires the Haitians at 15. Why will they take 15? Well, because they're rental cost in their apartment zero because you're paying for it. All right. Oh, by the way, the rent, that apartment goes from $800 a month to $1,400. So those people who lose their jobs can't get another one except waiting a table in a bar somewhere are instantly displaced. All right. Mm. Now, on top of that, across these years, 30% of these people who had this illegal status somehow magically get a mortgage. Now, this is a temporary visa, a temporary status. How do you take out a 30-year loan when you don't have a right to be in America for the next 30 years?
I don't think you do.
And by the way, well, Chief, you do because 30% of the people did do it, okay? Now, here's the problem. No bank in their right mind would write that note unless they had some expectation that it was going to be good. Where do you think that expectation came from? It came from all this deficit spending and the expansion of the money supply.
The deficit spending is not going to immigrants. It's going to a lot of other people as well.
How do you think they funded the Section 8 payments?
Okay,
I think the bank made the loan because as soon as they make the loan, they sell it.
They sell it off. But here's the thing. So they did this in the lead up to 2008.
If you can sell the loan to somebody that's on temporary status, if you can sell the loan, you can find somebody to buy it.
Chief. At what rate? If you tell the truth, happened the last time was that they had these people taking out liar loans that had no income, no interest, whatever. They were lying about the tenor and the content of the credit behind those loans. All right, and when they blew up, rather than have to eat that because it was fraud, they got bailed out.
Yeah.
They get bailed out.
Why would a bank make a loan?
Who got bailed out?
Where people can lie about their income? It's because we have a cartelized banking system that's one big monopoly where the losses are socialized and the privates are private. Profits.
Chief, here's the point, okay?
It's the system that we have.
Look, you had Goldman Sachs, which was one of the companies that was packaging this stuff out and selling it out, okay? They got sued, and during discovery, it was disclosed that they were within their own group that was taking these notes, packaging them up and selling them. Within these, their own people, they were on conference calls describing these loans as vomit.
Carl, the demand for
they then got on the phone and sold them to customers as good paper. When they got sued, that is fraud. They knew they were selling garbage, and they were representing it as something other than what it really was,
Carol,
on purpose. They got busted, and they didn't get tagged for it.
No, but other people
and
did.
When they don't get tagged, then it encourages even
But other people did.
Well, yeah, but obviously the loss ends up on someone's sheet, right?
Why does everybody constantly zero in on the areas that somehow people tell you you should zero in at?
I wasn't told that I should zero in on this.
Okay,
but
Goldman Sachs, some of those things, when you talked about the loans in there were no good, some of those things they sold, that the demand was so high, they were synthetic loans in there. They were synthetic portfolios. There weren't even any loans in there.
Jay, I understand that, but the point is this. If I sell to you something that I claim is Viagra and it's actually a sugar pill, I'm supposed to go to jail.
Okay, except for the fact that why did these loans were 6.5%, 7%. Why were people, I mean, everybody wants to zero in on the schmuck that maybe shouldn't have got a loan, okay? Because that's, people somehow can only zero in on the person like themselves that got a benefit that they didn't get.
I don't think you've heard me do that.
But I'm saying there were $35 of leverage on every dollar of loan.
Well, yeah.
But that was the problem.
So how did we get, how does that happen when it's all based on fraud?
Okay, but what my point is that the money was coming from Japan, most of it.
So?
At 1% and 2%. The Fed should have realized that. You and I can't access that flow. They can. It's not like, I mean, I've been in business forever. I'm not going to run down the block for 6.5%.
Yeah.
The only way the three of us guys are gonna fall over ourselves to lend money at 6.5% if some idiot's lending it to us at 2%. Meaning the idiot being Japan. And they're not being idiots because it's us not completing the trade for the yen. If we would have completed the trade for the yen, we wouldn't have made any money because the interest rate here was 6 and there it was 2, right? The forward price would have had that in there. But we didn't. We did the two legs of the stand. But I'm saying...
You're right, Chief, but here's the problem. It all comes back to the same thing, okay? It is a federal offense to commit bank fraud.
Okay.
It is a felony. You're supposed to go to prison. When you collude with other people to fix prices, you're supposed to go
Goldman
to prison.
Goldman Sachs never goes to prison. They gave
now you just found the problem.
But AIG... They went out of business.
AIG went out of business.
Lehman went out of business. Some people go out of business. Some people don't.
All right. So maybe what we need is some citizen.
Well, the people going out of business are the show ponies. You gotta prosecute somebody.
I'm
not gonna prosecute anybody at Goldman Sachs.
I got a better answer than this. I just saw a movie about something like this. Mr. Judge, you let this guy off 47 times because then he turns around and rapes a 14-year-old girl. You got a little heroin problem. We're going to drag you off on the side of the road, slit your wrists, and it looks like you killed yourself because you had all this grief about this bad decision you made.
We got to go to break here, but why on this whole mortgage thing, why doesn't anybody, even incredibly intelligent dudes, realize that 90% of the hurt was in people just like us?
Well, of course it was.
But nobody says it. It's always, there was a liar loan. Most of those loans were people walking in, buying a house at 235 that was pumped up in price because of this stuff, put down the $45,000 that was either their inheritance, their savings, or their dad lent them the money or something. And a year later, when that house is worth $175,000, the people that got screwed were those people.
And guess what some of the people who tried to do it did? They went in there, they claimed that they had six-figure incomes, and they put up million-dollar portfolios against it, and they really made 50 grand a year.
Okay, but the lion's share of the hurt was in regular people.
I didn't say hurt. I said these guys caused it.
Oh,
And how many of them went to jail for doing
that? Well, I'm saying, but the hurt is in every man. And everybody seems to think that, you know, the two people who are sleazing away. I told you about...
Oh, no. Listen, Chief, you dumped all these people into Springfield, Ohio.
It had nothing to do with
that. It's about the Haitians. This is about all the Americans that got dispossessed of their place to live and their job.
All right. Well, that's, I know you like focusing in on that.
I got every person.
A quick story, and I remember because... I remember because of the content, but I also remember because the lady was especially attractive. Does that make me a knucklehead? I went to see this client, and it was we met at a first time I was in one of those what's the bakery that's spun off from a restaurant here? I don't know, the really really high end bakery that you go to get the coffee and the really good rolls and stuff. Anyway, so we meet there out in Schaumburg in one of those places. This guy wanders in with his wife. His wife, I meant, did she just walk off a movie set or what? Anyway, they sit down, and we're, you know, talking about managing money and so forth, and finally I said, no, so what do you do? And she goes, well, I just got fired. And I'm thinking, very bright, very well-spoken, I'm thinking, okay, who the hell would fire her? The thoughts that go through your mind, right? And she says, hey, I work for this mortgage place. This is how, you know, in some areas I'm pretty smart, in some areas I'm really pretty dumb. She says to me, yeah, I got fired like 3 months ago. I work for this mortgage firm. And I go, well, isn't the business doing pretty good? And she goes, we were doing great. Now, all of a sudden, we weren't. And this was right about the time one of our clients had gotten in trouble with one of those Bear Stearns thing. And I never put two and two together. Bear Stearns was going under. But why would you think that? So the lady goes, yeah, you have no idea what kind of deal we had going. And I go, all right, test me. She goes, we would put together, we'd gather up all these mortgages. You know, and we're making money on the appraisal and all this kind of stuff. We're doing fine. Every time we got a million, was it 10 million together, somebody would come out and pay us 106% of the price of the mortgage. I said, wait a minute. You got $1 million of mortgages together and somebody would pay you guys $1.06 million for that. And she goes, yeah. And I said, I was speechless. I go, I never heard anything like that. That's how bad. She goes, yeah, these are regular people. They put down 20%. The value of 15 to 20%. Our mortgages are high end, so people are overpaying for the mortgage. I go, you got to be bleeping. that's how. This is in Schaumburg, for God's sake. Have you guys even heard of something like that?
Oh yeah, this stuff was going on all over the place.
It's just a result of the system that we have. We have a system where the bankers are in a cartel that is supported and protected by the state. And anytime you have a monopoly like that,
there's a lot.
Credit card interest rates are 22% a year.
These guys weren't in this particular stuff.
I'm saying they exist within a monopolized
system. I think that money was coming right from Japan, who was buying them. And people were willing to go grab high quality 6%.
If a Japanese investor wants to do that, I guess that's their business.
You know, I'm talking about somebody here going over to Japan, taking their dollars, getting yen from them, borrowing money in Japan at a 1.5% or 2% where it was, and coming back here and said, sure, I'll pay a premium on 6.5% mortgages that are high end, which is what they did.
Hmm. I'm saying I don't think that kind of thing would be successful in a system that was characterized by no government monopoly, no monopoly protected by the state, and people having to compete against other people. I just don't think that would happen in that system. I think you get this gaming in these systems that are highly cartelized by the state.
Carl, let me get this straight. We got to go to break. The three of us are sitting there having an adult beverage, and I say, I got this deal where we can borrow money at 1.5% and as much as we want. No, we got to put up $1 million, but then we go borrow $50 million, and then we can invest $51 million at 6%. Hal would be the only guy that would say that's never going to work.
It works in the system.
Chief, as you're well aware, because you've certainly run into people that have done stupid things and have, you know, gotten in their pants as a consequence, right? And, you know, we all saw plenty of examples of it, both 2000, 2008.
We're seeing them now.
And we're seeing it now, okay? The problem with increasing the crank, with taking turns on the crank, is that in general, over long periods of time, it only works in a declining rate environment. And it's the only environment that anyone has known for the last 40 years. It started in the early 1980s, and it's been going on until about 2019, when it was starting to turn. The government came in, the pandemic was an excuse, they slammed rates back down to zero and cranked deficit spending, attempting to continue a trend that had run out on them and which they were stoking.
But it's so beautiful. If you're one of those guys, it's so beautiful.
Chief, and it was, which was being stoked post-08 by running Fed funds below the rate of federal deficit spending, which is crazy. But they were doing it, and they got away with it for 10 years. And by the way, Bernanke said when the crash happened in 08 that he could do this at the Federal Reserve, but you'd get about 10 years before it ran out of runway. Well, guess what? It did. They tried to slam it back in 2020, and what we got was a monstrous inflationary spike and an immediate and straight-up vertical increase in federal interest expense. Now, that is exactly what he said was going to happen, and it's exactly what did happen, and we are still sitting here today, 6 years later,
okay, but the people,
acting as though you can keep doing this without consequence. The, no, you can't.
Okay, we got to go to,
well, they got, they
all right,
got
we gotta go to break, reserves. Guys, but when we come back, yeah. The guys who bought the farms from the soybean farmers when they were tapped out, the guy who bought the Doral, naming the president, loves it. There's massive winners.
Well, anybody
here
that owns real estate that's in that market loves
without
it.
A doubt. S&P futures, actually, we're down now. We're down 4. We were up a bunch. NASDAQ was up 150. Now it's down 18. We will look for why that's happening on break. All three of us will do that. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jacks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Blowing up by Stocks and Jacks. Time out, Ricky on the board. SP futures down 3. NASDAQ futures down 11. Dow futures down 61. Nothing crazy going on here. Caterpillar's up $2. We've got NVIDIA up $1.61. It was one of the non-participants yesterday, which is kind of weird. Microsoft up 60 cents. It was down again yesterday, even with all the big rally in the tech stuff. Microsoft not been a big winner here. Neither is Tesla, although Tesla was up $20 yesterday. Now they're down 6 because there was some... they got a court decision that said something in 2023, one of the parts of the cars, they weren't going to have to pay any money or something. I don't know what happened there, but they essentially got a court decision that was like 3 years old going their way. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 594. That's 0.8%. Hang Seng down 145.6. Shanghai up 20.5. Shanghai has been up the last couple of days. In Europe, DAX up 308, 1.2%. These guys are catching up on yesterday. FTSE up 81.8%. CAC Rhino was down 46. Wait. They did not trade yesterday for something. CAC Rhino is... Wait, are they off because of the weather? They did not trade. I wonder why they're closed. Bonds up 2 basis points, 4.39. So right in this slightly under 4.5 level, which we've been for a while. We make a run at 4.5 once in a while, and then we come right back. Oil up 44 cents, 71.19. RBOB is down a penny, 304, but it is back over $3. So depending on your tax situation, you're paying somewhere, you know, 360 to 420, I'm guessing, would be where everybody mostly is. Gold down $8, hanging over 4,000, 4,030. Silver up 70 cents, 58.85. Foreign exchange, this has been the death knell for gold. The euro is back under 114, 113.9. British pound at 132, so the dollar has been very strong. Crypto down 1,500, 58,728. I don't know why MicroStrategy had a big rally yesterday, but now they're down today $5, 87.76. We're going to have our Mavens comment on that a little bit. What's the risk there? Rich, you got it for us. Traffic, weather, sports. Germany lost, and my buddies is He's sniveling big time. He's a big German fan.
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:41 a.m. here in Chicago. We're looking at 80 degrees right now with a high of 95. Partly sunny and hot. Breezy this afternoon. Caution advised if outside for extended periods of time. Tonight will be mainly clear but very warm and humid with a low of 77 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona right now, 77 degrees with a high of 103. Plenty of sunshine, gusty winds, low humidity, and dry brush resulting in a high fire threat. Tonight, clear skies and a low of 77 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, McHenry from Monroe, 17 minutes. We're looking at 31 minutes, Edens from Lake Cook. Eisenhower from Wolf is 30 minutes. We're looking at 24 minutes, Dan Ryan from 95th. And inbound Stevenson from 294 is 26 minutes. Lastly, sports. Yesterday, the White Sox beat Orioles 8-2. Cubs beat Padres 3-2. And Diamondbacks beat Giants 5-4. Today, we got Sox at Orioles at 5:35 p.m. Padres at Cubs at 7:05 p.m. And Giants at Diamondbacks at 8:40 p.m. That's all I got for your Chief.
Who else? Germany lost the knockout round. One of my buddies is...
Germany lost the knockout round. That's true. To Paraguay. And it was very, very intense. They went up to penalties and... Yeah, I guess they just definitely dropped the ball. In other news, Netherlands also lost to Morocco in another penalty round. So definitely yesterday was a very dramatic day for the FIFA World Cup. We have the United States facing off Bosnia and Herzegovina tomorrow at 7 p.m.
Were those both upsets? Or Morocco is supposed to be pretty good, right?
Morocco is a very, very good team, yeah. I would say so.
What happened with Morocco?
They won.
Wow, I went to sleep, wow.
Okay. Yeah, it was actually pretty surprising because the Netherlands is one of the favorite teams. It was one of the favorites to win the World Cup this year. But yeah, they just got booted off along with
that
Germany.
Morocco winger, the guy with the beard, he kept missing the goal there in the first half. I watched it through the first half and I think went to sleep.
Yeah, they're a little imprecise, you know. But yeah. Honestly, this is a really, really good team. I was looking into it and apparently it's like... half of their team wasn't actually born in Morocco. They have like heritage and stuff. So a lot of them got trained and formed as athletes in other countries, possibly much better nations like Spain or France and stuff like that. So now they have a really, really good level.
Yeah. Well, I called the foul on the Paraguay goaltender yesterday. It's like, this, I didn't know what it was, but I'm looking at that going, should that be a foul? And they end up calling a foul after the...
Yeah.
After the goal that Germany went up 2-1.
Yeah, I saw it.
Thought it was a foul.
I was thinking about
a year ago
too.
I wouldn't even know what it was.
Yeah, exactly. Honestly, I was a little confused about it too, but I guess you really cannot just get in the way of like the goalkeeper.
Yeah, the goaltender's gotta have freedom of movement.
Gotta let him be.
WNBA doesn't grant its players.
Yeah. That's
all right.
So guys, you know, there's all different kind of levels of this, which we joust back and forth, a lot of times we're not disagreeing,
we're not jousting, we're trying to figure out...
Yeah, we're trying to figure out the different levels, you know, where things are. And then there's you know, the media of which side there is, and I consider people in office now really part of the media, unfortunately. They try and get you to point a different direction, but I don't really see on a psychological level, you know, both of you guys, you're cannabis kind of guys, you're absolutely. I'm never going to say you're wrong that these policies have to have a cliff someplace. All I'm saying is the people that are doing them, they don't see it and they don't care, and they must think that the day that they go too far and are actually going to turn it around, they're going to get that memo too, and they're going to get out or something.
Going back to what Carl was saying about. The 10-year period running out and had to reset the whole system. At that moment in time during the pandemic is when the Fed changed all these banking rules, which creates an environment where only banks only want to lend to people who make loans on margin or leveraged, who use leverage to purchase financial assets. That is not a coincidence. To me, that is...
Well, that's the easiest loan in the world to make. Open your billfold, a couple of butterflies will fly out, and you're going to call me and say, I want to buy 1,000 shares of Microsoft. I'd say, well, gee, it's $370,000 now, but don't worry. Just send me a check for, when I say me, PTI, which goes to RBC, send me a check for $175,000 or whatever the hell the number is, $185,000. And you do that. I just gave you me. I just orchestrated you a $185,000 loan in 2 minutes. As soon as your check gets here, you got your stock.
Well, and you didn't have to vet whether or not I could pay it.
And the bank, they use the stock as collateral, and I
didn't argue over whether or not it was an unsound loan.
No, no.
I simply said you didn't have to fill out 1,400 pages.
I'm trying to go to the next step here. You talk about why did people lend people this money for houses? Well, for 80 years, the single best piece of collateral in the world was the U.S. housing market.
Yeah.
Okay, so the collateral,
and then they destroyed that.
Okay, and they destroyed. But now I'm not so sure. You know that Microsoft at 369. I'm not so sure that should be getting a 50% loan. If I was a Fed chair tomorrow, I'd make that, you better come up with 55 or 60, because I think this is getting out of hand a little bit. You know, I'm saying that what we see when we talk about $100 billion a month in margin loans going up, if you're any kind of Fed chairman, you're looking at that, and all of a sudden one eye is going to get a little wider, isn't it?
Well, what we really need is a free banking system, and we don't have a free banking system.
Well, you do at some level. I mean, Don't you think?
Tom, we don't have a free banking system. It's not even close to free banking.
What I'm trying to do is...
It's a government cartel.
I'm not arguing...
And think about this. When banks make bad decisions, all their bad decisions have losses associated with them. But those losses are socialized.
Well,
being a banker is a great business to be in.
You're a guy from Idaho.
The profits are privatized, and the losses are all socialized.
Okay, but you're a guy from Idaho and Utah, okay? Doesn't make you bad. But if you're in Chicago...
That makes me awesome.
Makes you awesome. But now, and you're right, at the top level, there's no competition. I mean, there's very little. You're absolutely 100% correct. But in Illinois, which was the last state to allow branch banking, I can walk outside my door and I can find six banks in 10-minute walk. That if I really wanted to, now they're not going to do cars and stuff like they used to. They're not near as competitive. But by and large, if you're a small business, if you want a seat loan or something, I'm not going to go to Chase. I'm going to go to Lakeside. That's my bank. You know, I mean.
Well, so, Chase isn't going to make the loan.
I understand that. But I'm saying in some parts of the country, people do have an alternative. Is my only point. In some areas, they don't.
Well, having an alternative is not a market system.
I'm saying that if you're a plumber, you're going to go to the Chesterfield or someplace, or you're going to go to one of those kind of places. You're not going to go to Wells Fargo and get it. They don't want you in the door. I'm saying some areas have it's a little. All I'm trying to say is in some areas it's a little better. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah,
a little better. Yeah.
Yeah, a little better. Still doesn't mean that. That WAMU wants me in the door. Who are you? Get the hell out of here!
I thought they blew up.
They didn't blow up. They're with somebody. They're with Wells Fargo, aren't they?
Yeah. Okay. Well, guess what? And then those guys, shoved, actually not opened accounts on people's sheets so that they could rake off some grift at the management level and get paid the spiffs. Yeah. By the way, that screwed the customer.
Well, what's her name?
You combine the banks being able to pay interest on reserves with the banking rule changes of 2020, it just skews this whole system. And I think what it does is it's been a long run coming where they've been trying to figure out how to game the system where it will just they can continue to print money. And it'll continue push up asset prices.
Well, hell, okay.
They're trying to engineer a system where there is no crash in home prices.
I get that, but all of these models that they've been running, and this is why it's going to fail. All these models.
Well, it's
going to
fail, yeah.
All these models that they've been running have been operating on the premise that there is no long wave rate cycle, and that they can prevent it from asserting itself. That's why you got the inflationary spike out of the COVID stuff that they did. That's why you got the straight up vertical line in federal interest expense. That all of the
Carl, that straight up spike corresponds to checkable deposits currency of the top 1%.
I understand that, Hal, but the point is this: when they did these things during the pandemic, that was not part of the modeling that they said was going to be part of the outcome, or they wouldn't have done it. because they know that ultimately that cuts it off. Why? Because the federal government has to make those payments. If you don't make the interest payments on your debt, your debt's called a default, and nobody loans to you because you didn't make the... You know,
well, they fall back to the blithering idiot theorists that say, as long as next year... We had, what's his name? I can't stand the Secretary of Treasury. Bessent, yeah. Or whatever his name. He came out and said, he's following the party line here, which the three of us, in our own ways, are bitching about. He's following the party line. He came out and said, this year, we're going to return to a 3% real growth.
No, we're not.
I'm just saying what he said.
I know what he said.
Okay, when he says that, what
well,
is
he
it?
Can say that with a cooked inflation.
Guys, when he says that, the mantra for the last four presidents, one that none of us agree with, is as long as your growth is a smidge higher than your increase in the debt, you're okay. So they're going to try, when he said, by the way, growth's going to be 3%, what he really said was, we can increase our debt by 2.9% this year and we're okay. The fact is, that's never happened in the last 15, 20, 30 years. Right.
Well, geez,
right. Am I right or wrong? Isn't that
you're right? But the reason it didn't immediately get stopped is because in a generally secular declining rate environment, every time you have to roll it over, the interest rate goes down.
Right.
All right. And therefore, if I've got $1 million worth of debt out at 5%, and I'm paying $50,000 a year to have that out, and it goes down to 4, now I'm paying 40. All right. Now, I can pay the 40, or I can take out the additional line, so I'm still paying the 50. All right? The problem is, when that cycle turns, every time you have to refinance, every time you have to roll it over, the rate goes up.
Okay. The subject we're all talking about in a different way, and we're going to give Hal the chance to get into the Oval Office. In 2000...
All right. I got to jump, so I have to let you guys fight it out.
You got to give me 1 second.
All right, I'll listen.
Okay, in 2000, our debt to GDP ratio was 57%.
Yeah.
Now it's 122. All of us, in our own way, are saying this is unsustainable. Now the question is, if you walk into the Oval Office, hey Trumpy, stop making trades, and what if you were to say, where's the number? Is it 123? Is it 125? Is it 250? When all of us, I won't say finally are right, but when we're talking about actually starts to crumble. Obviously, if you'd have said it at 115, we'd have been wrong, right?
If I know where you're going with it, here's the reality of it. You're talking about human psychology, and you are asking a question that is only answerable in hindsight and in retrospect, just like it was in 2000.
Yeah, but I'm trading money for people. Hell, I want to know the day before.
Guess what?
It doesn't work like that, Chief, and you know it, because what happens every single day, and you know this is a trader, and I know this is a trader, is that every morning some group of people wake up with a raging hard-on, convinced that if they buy more Micron, they're going to make a F-ton of money.
Yep.
Okay? And some group of people every morning wake up in a cold sweat, convinced that the stock price on Micron is going to crash by 50% in tomorrow.
Yep.
All right. And therefore, and so you have two groups of people: one mashing the buy button, and one mashing the sell button. And as long as there is a reasonable balance between those two groups, things continue in a more or less orderly way, either up or down. The day that no one wakes up with the hard on is when it comes apart.
I just want to know, I wouldn't mind being the guy that morning who buys puts for my people.
Well, guess what? I'd love to be that guy too, but I can't see in your dreams in the middle of the night.
Well, if it's...
Hey, Carl, do you think... Carl, do you think the siloing of America produces those two groups of people? Because if you like the president in power, psychologically, you're going to be kind of the buy person. And if you don't like the president, you're going to be the "I got to get rid of it" person.
Okay, but that shift, here's,
and then it reverses every time.
Yeah, it used to be if you liked the company, you didn't care what the president was. Boy, it really has changed, hasn't it?
Boy, that's changed, hasn't it? Yeah. Well, here's the other thing though, too. Hal, you got to be a little careful with that, because that sounds good, except in the modern era, the margin of victory, the margin of "I like this guy, I don't like this guy" has been small single digits. right?
Yeah.
The exception to that was Nixon's second term. He won by the largest popular vote margin in American electoral history. And a few months later, we all know, yeah. You know, he was the guy that you would, you know, you would go have a beer with, right?
Yeah.
So that is a very fickle thing, all right? And if you look at the situation now, with the exception of a handful of hardcore MAGA, supporters, you look at the stuff that's running around and people saying, hey, wait a minute, you said we were, we put you in office because you were going to throw out every single illegal immigrant. You obviously lied. By the way, we have, 35% of the tech workers out in Silicon Valley are Indian and they're 2% of the population. That is obviously illegal discrimination. And when are you going to do something about that? Well, never, because it makes the stock price go up. Okay, and it's the same thing with, well, why are all of these residents at Indiana University's hospital, explain to me why 80% of them didn't get their medical degrees in the United States, they've been imported. Okay, now we have all these people who come out of our medical schools with $200,000 worth of debt, and yet a significant percentage of them go unmatched.
Yeah, you can,
no residency, you can't practice.
Yeah, you can go to have plastic surgery in Thailand, and all the plastic surgeons have been educated here.
Well, and the same thing, you can get on a plane and go to India to have an operation done at 10% of what it costs in the United States. And by the way,
you can go to,
the guy actually got his training at Harvard.
Yep.
You go to Los Algodones, Mexico, and
yeah,
spend 10 times less on a procedure there than you can in the United States.
Yeah. But, right. But the point is that the guy over there, he went to Harvard Medical School.
All right, Carl will be back on Thursday because we're getting the labor numbers on Thursday. So we're going to have, we're going to scrunch Lou down a little bit. We're going to scrunch Wayne and Andrew. And then we're going to have Lou on, or Carl on, and we'll have everybody on Thursday.
We'll have our fun. Yeah, I'll be remote, but I have my laptop. I'm all good.
Some might say he's always kind of remote, but that's, some might say. Anyway, wherever you're going, have a nice time, bud.
I will.
Hal, we go back and forth on the numbers that are economic, and I know I'm way too far on this. We only got a couple of minutes. Is the and I know you'll find something here that I did wrong, but I've got the money supply again.
Just have a different take. It's not about right or wrong. It's about a different take.
From January 20 to April 2026, I've said this like every day now. I got the money supply up 48%. So every day I quote you and say, well, Hal would say that means your inflation is somewhere near there. Let's say there's some, some increase in productivity or something, but let's say our inflation is over 40%. The CPI admits to 28%, and I've got people's hourly wages going up like 21%. And I'm going to say in those three numbers, other than, people not liking Democrats or not liking Republicans at a base level, I think that those three numbers are the reason why a lot of the discord you see in this country is happening. People are just not keeping up. If you look at the wealth numbers of the market, the wealth might actually be up more than the 48%, but only with the people that own stock or in resorts and things like that. Not even really downtown office space, but housing too. So the wealth part is became a much bigger part of, and I think this is really part of why the social fabric is breaking down. You just can't go get a job and withstand what the government is doing to you inflation-wise. You used to be able to, and now you can't. And now, granted, if your dad gave you 10,000 shares of Micron or IBM, you're okay. You don't care about the gas prices if you own 1,000 shares of Chevron. Because, you're still going to bitch about them, but even what you shouldn't really care, because you're up more on your Chevron and you're paying a tank. I think these numbers, which we all joust about, really are the reason why the politics is crappy, people don't like each other. I think a lot of it is that. Hal, do you agree or not?
I think the reason why people don't like each other is politicians have gotten really good at dividing and conquering, and social media contributes to that. If you're a conservative, you can't like a progressive. If you're a progressive, you can't like a conservative. 30, 40 years ago, your best friend was somebody who voted for a different person. But today, I think social media amplifies the ability of politicians to demonize the people that they disagree with, and that right there is the problem.
Well, I think I think you're spot on, but you're the second derivative. What I'm saying is, if everybody felt that they were getting a fair shake, nobody would care about a few immigrants getting a job. Nobody would care about somebody's stock going up. But the fact is, when everybody's not advancing, everybody who does advance, you have a feeling that they're doing something shady, or else why would they be advancing when you're not, is what I'm saying.
Well, I've come to the conclusion, Jewish people who adhere to the law set out in the Old Testament, Jewish people that do that, they tend not to be consumers. They sow, they build wealth, and because they have more wealth than their neighbors, the neighbors start thinking that they must be doing it somehow illegally. And I think that right there explains why Jewish people who adhere to the law through history are targeted, because they think they're getting that wealth from some nefarious.
They also, the Catholic Church people. Didn't allow people to charge interest forever.
Yeah.
So the Jewish guy was the guy who charged interest.
Well, the funny thing about that, in Europe, one of the only jobs that Jewish people could have is being a banker.
Yeah.
That was one of the few jobs. And being a banker was not like something that was considered a moral. It was considered an immoral.
Yeah, because you charged interest.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Anyway, bud, good stuff as usual. Are you teaching? Are you off? What are you doing?
I'm doing health economics for the next 5 weeks, and then we're transferring all of our... We're using a new LMS. We're going from Blackboard to Canvas, and Canvas is probably the best... learning platform out there, online learning platform, and I'm just moving everything from Blackboard to Canvas, and it takes a lot of effort.
All right, bud.
Plus, I submitted an abstract for a paper that I'm going to look at.
You got to keep us up to speed on this banking rules versus money supply.
Yeah, that's going to be my second project down the line. My next project is going to be the AI effect on science, technology, and professional type occupations or employers.
All right, because you know I'm really interested in the one. I'm interested in all of them, but that one for sure. SP Futures down 3, NASDAQ down 34. We were up pretty good when we came in, but we're not crashing or anything. We're just down a little bit. Ricky, nice job. See everybody tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.